Hello and welcome to the TBG Real Estate Podcast, where we connect you with some of the most innovative and exciting real estate leaders today. We will show you that there are numerous paths to a successful career in the real estate industry, and that some of your greatest missteps can be turned into your greatest triumphs. Without further ado, here's the head of TBG Real Estate, Chris Papa.
All right, folks, welcome to this edition of the TBG Real Estate Podcast. I am your host, Chris Papa from TBG Real Estate. And today I'm in freezing New York City, but we have somebody calling from the West Coast where it's nice and warm. We got Mr. JP Ackerman. JP is the CEO at Simple Finance. How are you doing, JP?
Doing great. Thanks for having me today, Chris.
My pleasure. So we've known each other for a couple of years. Pretty recently, you joined Simple Finance as their CEO. Congratulations on that. Can you give us a little background of what Simple Finance is and does?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's Simple Finance is focused on the mortgage marketplace and bringing sort of a renewed vision to how mortgages get done in hopes of empowering customers making home transactions to be more competitive with traditional cash buyers. A streamlined experience translates to a streamlined transaction, which effectively benefits everybody participating in that transaction, whether it be the agent, the buyer, or the seller.
So if I'm a buyer and what's the target buyer? Do you have any certain like age range or sort of anything like that?
Yeah, we're really focused on the first time buying millennial. We have seen for the first time in the last 20 years, a new demographic really entering the marketplace and owning the sort of momentum of the market. The first time buyer today represents about 55% of the home buying marketplace, with 45% of the transactions being driven by millennials. It's an interesting environment in that for the first time in this two decade path, we've seen people that have entered the marketplace without necessarily having all of their partners in terms of like real estate agents and mortgage brokers already in place. And so they're coming at it from a very different angle. And so as we think about Simple Finance, we're approaching the millennial first-time buyer with tools to be able to empower them to think about the transaction in a more insight-driven way, more data, more valuation capability to ensure they're making a good purchase and selecting the most lucrative house to purchase. And trying to create an environment for them where they are, all the research they're doing before they're engaging a traditional realtor, that they're able to digest it in a more powerful way and make smarter decisions. And you know, the world that they're facing today for you or me entering the marketplace, you know, 10, 15 years ago, while we didn't have all the tools they have now, we also had a bit more favorable environment. I mean, the millennials come into the marketplace at a point of extreme height in terms of value. Mm-hmm. We're tending to see them float out of a lot of the, you know, large urban areas into what has historically been a lot of secondary markets. We've seen the emergence of areas like Nashville and Denver, and you know, Austin has been sort of a mainstay for a while now, but it wasn't always like that. So we've seen the emergence of these new markets that have attracted a lot of both tech employment as well as millennial buyers. And we see the need for that group to be able to have greater transparency in the way that homes are going to be underwritten and mortgages are going to be underwritten to empower that purchase and allow them to act in a more streamlined way. So we're really focused on that group. And as I said, empowerment is sort of a theme for all that we're doing.
And do you think, I don't know the statistics in front of me, but I think if I recall correctly, like millennials have the least amount of money saved of any generation, like at their time. Or not ever, but like of the last couple generations, and then they're waiting to buy houses until later. So that I think that's brought the rise of the single family rental business a little bit too. So is that something? Do you think this is like a solution for that? Like I think most people generally have the idea they want to buy a house. They just don't either have enough money or they just don't know how to.
What you're keying into is an enormous topic, I think, facing the U.S. residential marketplace. And, you know, there's a lot of different solutions and opportunities emerging from that. But yeah, you nailed the headlines. Millennials have waited both out of want and need, or I should say fear and need. They save less. They've taken on more debt. They have lower incomes on average. They've accelerated more slowly in their career. I mean, it's a generation that was sort of still has not gotten fully out from under the cloud of the last recession. And I think that most economists would suggest that like starting your career at that point tends to burden your income growth for the entire duration of your career. Like you never really get out from under it. So there are definitely some challenges. I think while those are challenges, I think superficially seem to be you know, things that they can't overcome. I think when we look at like where they're buying houses, it's different than what happened in the last cycle. For Gen Xers, as an example, you know, there was this notion 15 years ago of like driving till you qualify. So as housing prices got radically higher, they just went farther out into these suburban areas. We're seeing millennials just jump to new markets. And so as they're jumping to new markets, they're significantly less costly. So the affordability is a step function better. So in that regard, I think they're solving it in a different way and certainly providing rise to different types of home or shelter propositions, if you will. And yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic for them. And what Simple Finance is aiming to do, and it's certainly the educational or empowerment angle is one part of it. But also I think it's that what we've seen from the millennials is a general distrust or apprehension about the incumbent players in the marketplace. I mean, no doubt we've seen realtor usage go up to, I think they're at 92-93% right now. I mean, it's gotten better and better and better. But we also see like the millennial homebuyer going to do significantly greater research in a way that they're pushing that engagement with the realtor to the very back end of the process. And so when we think about the mortgage provider, it's even farther behind that. So our angle is to try and provide them more tools up front so they're empowered to go back and engage with the market and search so that by the time they actually get to the real estate agent, that they've formulated their own view. They've selected the right markets. They've identified markets where they're going to have the best quality of life. And our goal as a financier, I mean, we are completely aligned with the home shopper. We want to provide them with a mortgage and ultimately the valuation of a home as an example, the speed at which they purchase is not really core to us. We just want to make sure they have the right tools and that we ultimately can provide objective underwriting. So when I look at other markets like buying a car or getting a credit card, like different types of consumer finance, you know, they're very streamlined. And we've seen the automotive marketplace, it's credit and income qualification. You never worry whether the lender is going to actually support the value of the car you've purchased. We foresee that sort of a reality in the home buying marketplace as well. And so we hope to be able to provide consumers tools that would suggest that they have a clear understanding of what the value of the home that they're going to buy is well before they actually purchase and can use that as a point to streamline what today is a 46-day transaction down to something that would be closer to 10 to 15, about the same speed at which a cash buyer can close a house.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, at least where I live in the Bay Area, if you want to buy any, you know, most houses, yeah, you're competing against these cash buyers and it's crazy. You know, cause the prices are so high and a lot of people can, there for somehow are they able to buy those, but like I can't afford a cash purchase of a house, so you know, most people are going to take that cash offer because it's just quicker as a seller. And so is that something I could use as a buyer?
Absolutely. Like, fundamentally the cash buyer has a disproportionate edge in competing for homes in the marketplace today, and you know that largely is because of the uncertainty riddling the mortgage process. The mortgage process, as I mentioned, takes about 46 days on average, and we've seen some inroads into that, but you know, it's really not pervasive through the industry. And so when you look at it as a financed buyer, you're paying a premium typically for the house if you want to win the bid, especially in these competitive marketplaces. So our goal is to help exactly you in that scenario. On average, according to Adam Data, they see an 8.8% discount a cash buyer garners over that of a financed buyer, which when you sort of think about the broader spectrum of problems in housing today, affordability and the kind of affordability crisis being at the forefront of that list, you know, you have 8.8% worth of flex in the marketplace that is not being addressed because of the mortgage inefficiency. And so when we think about trying to close that gap and create more affordability, as well as create just a clearer, more transparent transaction, our goal here is to shorten that process to fuel all of the above.
That's awesome. And so let's backtrack here a little bit. You're out in California. What part of California are you in?
So I'm in Newport Beach, down in Orange County, Southern California.
Nice, man. Did you grow up around there?
I didn't. I actually grew up in Missouri. I've been in California now for about 15 years. I moved out here in 2005, in real estate, no less. So it was the peak of the market. But that was fun. A lot more fun than the next couple of years. But I grew up in I grew up in Missouri. I spent a couple of years in Oklahoma. Went to University of Tulsa in Oklahoma, and then shortly thereafter to grad school at University of Georgia. I finally kind of made a full loop out to the West. I ended up in Boise, Idaho, working at Hewlett Packard after graduate school in product management strategy, and then shortly thereafter came down to Southern California in 2005.
So how did you? I mean, you're currently, you know, the CEO of a, you know, it's an entrepreneurial shop, right? It's a prop tech company. That's not, I mean, it's not huge as far as headcount is concerned, right? You've been there for a couple months. I mean, that's, so you took a risk. You were at a larger shop, but still not a huge place. I was Canary. So you have obviously a high tolerance for risk, which most people wouldn't. I mean, I think accountants probably have the lowest tolerance, and then salespeople have the highest. Where did that come from? Did you grow up in a family of entrepreneurs or real estate people?
So not real estate. Real estate is a sort of this different line. It was kind of an accident, but a little bit in terms of entrepreneur. I was in the Midwest. I grew up in a very small town. You sort of had to be an entrepreneur at heart to in those environments. I mean, we were a small farm town. My family was all in printing, newspapers going back many, many decades, and then magazines and that, specialty printing of that nature. Not so much a meaningful business in the world today, but you go back 100 years ago, like starting a business and ultimately trying to, bring something new to the marketplace was sort of core in that. So I did not spend a ton of time around entrepreneurial shops before the last 7 years. Mm. I came out of grad school working at Hewlett Packard, and I went to a slightly smaller company in the form of Pulte Group, which is one of the large public developers that constituted the first 12 years of my career. What I learned in both of those was that there were great training grounds. I learned an enormous amount about both the functions of business as well as about the functions of real estate, specifically at Pulte Group. But they, while they're great training grounds, they also, there's a point in which you're limited in what you can do to sort of affect the outcomes of the business. And, for a few, you reach the top and ultimately you control those companies. And in many cases, it's just not a reality, whether it be because of you, because of the marketplace, because of your expertise, whatever. For me, I had an opportunity coming out of the recession to work on some new projects at Pulte Group, and was overseeing a large portion of the strategic planning and investments of that the Western region of the United States. And I started interacting with some of these smaller tech providers, specifically the guys that founded House Canary, and they were doing some really fascinating things about predicting the velocity of the markets and predicting the pricing across many very local marketplaces across the United States. And I was fascinated by it. I sort of firsthand seen all of the problems that we had faced as a market in real estate, and more specifically, as a big public company, the inability of our own infrastructure to sort of nimbly shift to address those problems. And I became sort of fascinated and sort of intolerably fascinated with the notion of getting involved in it. And it was just time in my life and an area in the marketplace that was really new and just drew me in. I ended up jumping in with them. And I've always kind of figured taking these types of risks in your life are ones that you're going to come out better no matter what. When I left Hewlett Packard to go to Pulte Group, I went from an 80,000 person company to a 15,000 person company. I thought I was going to a small place. But, it's real estate, and it's like, I'm going to learn something. I'm going to come out. If this all falls apart in a couple of years, I'm going to come out a better person. I certainly did. And, in 2014, after 10 years, after I thought it might have only been a year or two, it was 10 years later, I ended up going to House Canary. And, that was going to a group of four or five. And it was obviously a different magnitude of shift from 80,000 to 10. But, I got there. And it's like, if this falls apart, I'm going to come out a better person. And I did. And you know, then I met Bradford Cross, who was working on some technology that around valuations, and you know, started chatting with him, and ultimately came over and started Simple Finance. And I got walking through it, and I was like, well, if it doesn't work, I'm going to come out a better person. But I think the common theme in each one of these was, well, yeah, I did have risk tolerance. I think there was probably a pragmatic acceptance, though, that like this whole, I think life and a career is all about learning. And if you don't experience it, you're never really going to learn. A lot of the stuff you just don't read in books. Like you can get the premise, but you don't get the real experience of what it's like. So you go do it. And I think most people who put themselves out there find them that they're a lot more capable of doing the things that seem so challenging from afar. But if you don't ever get in the middle of it, it always seems sort of the, you know, too afar to be able to really digest.
Now, I spoke to, we place, you know, experienced hires generally, but you know, occasionally I speak, there's a lot of inquiries from people who are junior, who are probably at the same level you were at Hewlett Packard, who are like dying to get into real estate, and they just don't know how to. So you made that switch from HP into real estate. Like, how did that happen? Well, one, where did that interest come from, or was it just sort of like a fluke, or and how did you make that happen?
Well, I mean, I know the world has changed a lot since I made that shift in 2005, but I will say that move to real estate was accidental. I wasn't necessarily trying to get into to real estate, nor was I. I was trying to get into Southern California. I was in the process.
Yeah.
That was the core focus. What's interesting, I've actually in the last 4 or 5 years hired a lot of people that have been in that scenario. And you know, generally speaking, the environment's opened up so much since then. It was really hard to break in, I think, at that point. You had like often to bring some level of expertise to the table. And I think what we've seen, especially around prop tech, the innovation that we've seen opening up in the last 5 years, you've got hundreds of companies that all of a sudden have emerged taking on big ideas with an environment that's got enormous inefficiency. So there's, you know, great opportunities for success. And you know, they're desperately looking for people. I mean, I think that the one thing I say to everyone that I talk to that is, you know, looking to make a move in their career, and I think this is whether or not you're old, you're young, you're early in your career, late in your career, it doesn't really matter. I think you have to answer the question first of like, where are you going? Like, what's the direction that you want to point yourself in and why? And, you know, given some level of like general direction, start having lots of conversations. I think the one thing I can say, having sat on, I think all sides of the hiring table now, and I say that of like the hiring manager, the hiring manager's manager, as well as being the employee. Yeah, the key is like the hiring manager and the entrepreneur all want to talk to people. They always want to engage with smart people. And if they don't, shame on them, but I think it's pretty rare. Like most of the time people are up for coffees, they're up to talk to smart people. And if you're a smart hiring manager, you learn from every one of those conversations. And so what it sort of conveys to me and what I try and convey to people about in this topic is like, go talk to people. They want to talk to you. They want to spend time hearing about what your perspectives are. And like, they're all trying to break down barriers. So they're looking for the teams that will help them break down that barrier. So engage with them. The thing that I also think is really a lot easier today than it once was is the tools that are out there to understand the real estate landscape have gotten much, much better. And if you look at tools like, you know, each of the kind of major players in the venture capital marketplace do a lot to map the landscape for prop tech, for fintech, for, you know, every construction tech, and just keep going down that path. There are so many different ways and angles to play in this marketplace. Like, understand those. And many of these are really young, early companies. And I'll go back to my, you know, previous statement of, you're never going to get the experience unless you try. Like, call them, email them. Like it's a great way to, you know, start those connections and get engaged.
Yeah, I think a theme of this podcast, or of generally, you know, I've had, I think, about 40 of these podcasts. I mean, most of it is like, you got to get, you know, you can't just, you got to make it happen, right? I mean, sometimes you get lucky, you walk into something, but generally it's, you got to get your ass out to different events. You know, you got to be calling people, you got to be on the street going to like networking events, especially like at the junior level when, you know, there's not somebody like myself who's going to be able to like represent you, you know, it just doesn't really happen that well. So you got, I mean, real estate and the world itself, even though we've become much more connected in technology, it's still, there's nothing that supplants those face-to-face meetings. And showing that hustle and desire to potential employers is amazing. And the one skill that everyone needs, and the one part, every company needs salespeople, whether you're selling a product or like you're involved with, you know, and that's the recession-proof industry because, you know, you're always making revenue generators. So you might not like people who may not like sales. I never wanted to get into sales. That was never my intention, but I'm in a business development sales type of industry. So I love it. But learning to sell and like getting that sort of cold calling ability type of stuff, being okay with rejection is there's nothing, I don't think there's any greater skill out there than that.
You're so right. If I had to sort of think about it as a younger person, what I didn't do as well as I could have, and I like to think of myself as a pretty outgoing person, but you know, there's 24 hours in a day, you sleep for 8 of them, the rest of them should be filled with something. And you know, even when you get into a good job, you should still be always out there just talking to people, just learning from them what they're going through. And like most people want to hear them talk anyway, go pay, you know, buy them a cup of coffee for $3.
Yeah. Say,
can I listen to what you face getting into the role you're in? What are the things you're thinking about? What are the things you're fearful about? You know, those are things that most people want to talk through. And I think as a young person, like, I don't know, maybe this is just my personality, but I do think that most people who have had any level of success in their career and can afford any spare time are generally pretty welcoming of the opportunity to share that perspective with people. And God knows, I think everybody has the blood, sweat, and tears. They know the blood, sweat, and tears they've invested in getting to where they are. Like helping people to have less bloodshed in that process is always something. It's an easy thing to do, and most people are willing. So definitely encourage you to put yourself out there. And just even if it's a cold LinkedIn of saying, hey, I'd really love to learn a little bit more about how you got to where you are. I'm trying to get started. Is a reasonable thing to ask, and I would think that you get a good response. I always have. I've been fortunate. I wish I would have done even more of it.
Yeah, me too. I think who's the 4-hour work week guy? What's his name? Tim Ferriss. Remember him, Tim Ferriss? Like he's a big podcast guy. I think in 4-hour work week or one of those books, he has like a challenge where it's like you got to get somebody famous on the phone, like you know, get like George Clooney on the phone. And you could do it, you know, if you put some effort into it, like within a week, you could probably get somebody like famous on the phone. I think that goes a long way. I mean, if you really wanted to get somebody on the phone, like if you were a young guy and you're like, I want to get the CEO of such and such company and talk to him, like you could figure out a way to do it. And that's what I did as a recruiter starting out. I mean, that's basically what I was doing. It was before LinkedIn, actually, too. You have to just figure out ways to get these people on the phone. And, you know, if there's a desire, you just have to have that real desire to do it. Where do you go back to Simple Finance? What's the next growth phase? Where do you see it going in the next couple of years?
So we're very much in launch mode right now. And so as we think about our business, we have two major components. One, which is our technology component, which you know in there we house a lot of the artificial intelligence and model development work that we use to both you know create tools that are of high value to engage customers, but more importantly to think about underwriting loans and expediting the process of them. And then the other side of our business is really the front end customer acquisition process, which is totally dedicated to a mobile app application experience. And so that mobile app is designed to try and create you know, very relevant tools to engage home shoppers and help them through that process going from 0 to 1. How do they get prepared? How do they use like financial planning tools? Use valuations to shop for houses and ultimately select the house. Basically everything up until that offer starts. So our goal there is to you know bring on a lot of like really great product expertise. So our growth phase right now, it's a high percentage growth on a very low base. And we're going from 0 to 1 and it's about getting our first loans done in Q1. It's about getting our marketed launch out in April. So we're moving very fast as a small group. We're a team of 6 today. And while we'll rapidly expand, we'll be a small organization for the foreseeable future. So we're really keenly focused today on ensuring that we have a deep and intimate relationship with our customers. We understand their pain points, that we understand how they are approaching the marketplace, and that we're developing our product to address those needs in a very sort of tailored way. And so we're in the process right now of bringing on marketing and product roles, both leadership, team players, to expand those, just to ensure that we are always thinking it with every step with our consumers in mind, and that we have a very seamless process for which they can operate through, and again, solving the real problems, not superficial ones.
That's awesome. Well, now we're going to get to the portion of the show where I just kind of fire off a couple questions. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. They're not hard. There's no wrong answer. So I make it sound, it's less dramatic than I make it sound. Any books you recommend to people?
The First 90 Days. It was recommended to me. I just read it when I was coming into this role. I think it's an amazing book to actually go back and recognize that you have to continuously reinvent yourself. You've got to align yourself with the right people. You've got to think about the core problems. You've got to prioritize what you're going to tackle first. The first 90 days it resembles, I think, every set of 90 days in your engagement with any company, no matter what role you play. And I think it's one to read a few times over.
I have not read that one. I'm going to look that up. Any podcast recommendations?
I desperately love The Marketplace on NPR. I listen to it every single day. I think it's a great just sort of primer on what's going on in the economy. And obviously in a financial services type of a role, it's one that is a Cliff Notes version of what I generally think are the most important elements of the macro economy affecting us and how we operate.
Awesome. Good answer. Now, what do you like to do outside of work that keeps you sane while you're doing work?
I'm not sure if it keeps me sane, but I have two young children. I have a 2.5-year-old and a 3.5-year-old. So and be sane amidst all of that, although it does kind of creep into the sleep and energy. But outside of family, which obviously is 99% of the time outside of work, every once in a while I'll try and get out sports. I love to play golf when I can. I used to do a lot more of it than I have for the last 7 years, but just getting outside. I mean, Southern California is an amazing place, but unfortunately, I see outside too little.
Yeah, it's a problem sometimes. What advice would you give to your younger 20-year-old self?
So,
you kind of went through that already earlier.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to that theme. Be patient and learn a lot more. I mean, I think that there's always a home for ambition, but ambition can be termed in a very different way. And I think ambition in a lot of cases meant thinking about the next role, the next role, the next role. And I did probably a lot more of that than I'd like to think I should have. And I probably should have done is spending a lot more time just thinking about the overall career map and making sure that the 20s were the point where I was taking more risk in learning and starting new businesses, doing things with younger businesses, but putting myself out there a lot more as opposed to just relying on the ecosystem that I was in to put myself out there.
Yeah. You don't know what you don't know, right? And I look back, I'm like, man, I had all these potential opportunities passing me by and I should have just been more assertive, but I didn't know, I didn't know until I got older. Got a little more perspective. What do you look for in hiring people? What type of people kind of fit the company you're building?
So the expression I always use is the best member of the team is the one that will walk through the wall for you. And I think that can be described a little more articulately in the fortitude and determination, the complete ability to will something into action. Those to me prevail over almost everything else. What company you came from, what school you went to, your expertise on the subject matter, all of those are things that largely sort of represent what can be learned. And, obviously you're looking for somebody who's smart in whatever the role is, but the reality is it's about your willingness to actually push hard. And I always look for the demonstration somebody can show me that they are going to go that extra mile and that, when you're going to find yourself in that sort of proverbial trench with them, that they're going to do everything they can to make sure that you guys get out safely. And I've seen a number of people in my career who have met that mold, and it has never failed me to sort of rely back on that.
Awesome. Now, most importantly, how do people find you? What's your website? Are you on the social media channels?
Indeed. Simplefinance.io is our website. You guys, for anybody interested, please sign up. We're in the process of building the beta list for our launch in February. So anxious to get out there and would love anyone's feedback on the applications. On LinkedIn, it's I'm under JP Ackerman on LinkedIn. But yeah, hit me up. For anybody listening too, like I think that we have this view of, you know, the disruption in financial services being something that's sort of a collective effort. Whether it be for partnership, just a sort of open dialogue, or really wanted to join, like this is something that we're anxious to build the sort of ecosystem around. So as I've mentioned earlier, in terms of coffee chats, I'm always open to buy somebody coffee and listen to what their perspectives are on this one. So if anybody's open for those, please let me know.
Awesome, man. Well, JP, great podcast. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. It's been great getting to know you better.
Hey, Chris, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right, man. Enjoy that California sun.
Thanks, man. Stay warm in New York.
Yeah, I won't. Thank you. All right.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the TBG Real Estate Podcast. Please visit us online at tbg-realestate.com or on Instagram at tbg.realestate. Until next time, have a great week.